Good morning. This Shabbos is Parsha Shmini, and there are less than 30 shopping days until Pesach. So what I would like to do today, we have, I guess, over this year, in this shiur, we've been focusing on the Darchei Noam Shebetorah, understanding how the Torah navigates for us the ways of the world itself, and trying to learn it from the Parsha. And I say we'd have an additional goal as we're getting in the mindset of Pesach, and perhaps to incorporate that in here as well, without stretching or kvetching too much. So the what I would like to learn with you about today is Mesorah, and the significant place of Mesorah, and the significant place of, it would seem, on some level, learning how to go beyond Mesorah, even though that sounds pretty radical and crazy. But we'll try to look in our Parsha to see a little bit what this means, how this works. And we have an important test case, or an important illustration of it, I think, very much within our Parsha. Without question, the dramatic event that Parsha Shmini is associated with is the deaths of Nadav and Avihu. This is the way it usually is. Parsha Shmini has a wonderful, magnificent highlight, but it's followed by a very difficult tragedy. And we sometimes remember the tragedy grabs the headlines away from the highlight. Parsha Shmini really is about the Shmini Lemiluim, the eighth day of the dedication of the Mikdash, the day when ultimately the Shechina came to rest amongst the Jewish people. We talked about it a little bit back in Parshas Pekudei, the fire that descended from the heavens in order to show the presence of Hashem that had come to rest amongst the Bnei Yisrael. This day, which is spoken about back in Parshas Pekudei, spoken about here, spoken about again in Sefer Bamidbar, Rashi brings at the beginning of the Parsha, it's the day that Notla Eser HaTorahs, the day that took 10 crowns, day with all kinds of magnificent associations. And we read in our Parsha, the beginning, they bring the Karbonos, they do everything which has to be done. This was the day that Aaron was serving, that the baton of serving in the Mikdash was being handed to Aaron HaKohen. And they succeed. Aaron comes. Aaron blesses the people. Moshe and Aaron go into the Ol Moed. They come out. They bless the people. Vayirokvod Hashem al kol ha'am. The presence of Hashem appeared before the people. And the pasuk describes the pasuk preceding the one at the top of your sheet, that a fire came out from Hashem and consumed on the mizbeach the things that the Jewish people had offered upon the mizbeach. And that, for a moment, was a beautiful moment. The pasuk says, "Vayar kolam vayaronu vayiflu al pneim." The people saw, vayaronu, that they gave rina, they gave shevach, they praised Hashem, they fell upon their faces, awestruck at having this vision of seeing Hashem come to make His presence felt amongst the Bnei Yisrael. But no soon had that been done that we have the next pasuk, which you have at the top of your sheet, "Vayikhu bnei aroi nodav aviu ishmachtaso vayitnu vahen esh." The sense which you get is that in the midst of this excitement, the children of Aaron, Nadav and Avihu, each one took machtoso, each one took his shovel, and they put upon it esh, they put upon it fire. Vayosimu ala keteres, and they put keteres upon that fire. Vayakrivu lifnei Hashem esh zara asher lo tziva isam. And they brought before Hashem an esh zara, a strange fire, that lo tziva isam, that they hadn't been instructed to bring. So they came and they brought ketores, uninvited to do so. And a fire came out from Hashem. Same description as the pasuk uses in the positive sense. A fire came out to consume the korbanos. Good. Now a fire comes out to consume them, not seemingly good at all. And if the fire came, same fire, same day, same moments almost, and came and consumed them by Yamusu lifnei Hashem. Yomer Moshe Aaron, Moshe said to Aaron, "Hu asher diber Hashem leimor b'krovaya kodesh v'apnei kol hamekaved." Moshe said, "Ah, This is what Hashem anticipated. This is what Hashem said, through my holy ones I will be sanctified, and my honor will be demonstrated before all of the people. And Aaron was silent. Vayidom Aharon. Aaron accepted whatever it was with silence. That's the story. The story will continue. So you know, before we go on in the story, let's just recall for ourselves a little bit of an understanding which we could get from Chazal about the sin of Nadav and Aviv. Rashi, right below this paragraph, Rashi says, "Vateitzeish Rabbi Eliezer Eimer, Leimesu bnei Aaron el al yedei shahiru halacha bifnei Moshe Rabban." You know what their mistake was? They were talmidim of Moshe Rabbeinu. Everybody was a talmid of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, Torah tziva lanu Moshe. And they took the initiative to decide a halacha, to decide to bring Torah, to decide to do something in the presence of Moshe, without waiting for Moshe to instruct them, without deferring to Moshe Rabbeinu. That's why they died, for being Moira halacha bifnei Moshe Rabba. Rabbi Shmuel Aimer, Shesuyei nechnesu l'migdash. No, it was something else. They came into the Migdash intoxicated. Teidan, I'll prove it to you. Because as the Parsha continues, Moshe, or Hashem, gives Aaron an instruction and says that Yayin v'shechor al teisht, don't drink intoxicants and come into the Migdash and do the Avoda. So it's normal. If a mistake is made and a dramatic consequence happens, so then what would happen afterwards? We would say to the person, make sure, don't do that again. Don't make the same mistake twice. So since that instruction came right after this tragedy, it implies that that was part of the fault which was there at this tragedy. So the simple shot in the pasuk is, the problem was an eish zara, asher letzivaisa. There was a k'tiris, they brought something that wasn't supposed to be brought. You're not supposed to bring korbanis uninstructed. Rashi says, broadens it, horu halacha bifnei Moshe Rabban. They paskin halacha in front of Moshe. They did it on their own, without going through the chain of teaching, of tradition, that should have been there. And then, this idea that they entered the Migdash intoxicated. There are other interpretations. There are other things which Rashi himself brings. Rashi says that Aaron HaKohen, when he did the Egel, so there was a gzeira of Ashmid Piryo Mimal, that all of his children, Loyalein Rachman Al-San, should have been lost. But Moshe Rabbeinu davened for Aaron, and Bonav HaNisorin, he spared that Elazar and Nisamar wouldn't. That's why Elazar and Nisamar are referred to as his remaining children. That's another interpretation. And Rashi also brings that elsewhere, that when the Bnei Yisrael were at Har Sinai, it describes how Moshe, Aaron, Nadav and Avihu, Zikrim Yisrael, they went up to Har Sinai. They didn't go all the way, but it says, Vayiru es Elokei Yisrael, they saw Hashem. Right, remember, and they saw beneath his feet, it was like a masa livnas ha-sapir, a sapphire brick. They saw Hashem, they ate and they drank, they were casual. So they were all nischaivu misalam hakayim. They went beyond their borders, they went beyond the boundaries that they should have stayed within.
Who were they all?
Those, the Nadav and Aviu and the Shivim Mizikne Yisrael, they all had gone out of bounds.
That's
huh? So each one got their consequence at the time, at a different time, at a different juncture. That's something else which Rashi says, which Chazal say. This is where Nadav and Aviu got their due. Complicated. So many different understandings of what's happening here. But let's, I want to learn with you here a little piece from the Gur Aryeh, from the Maral Miprag, as he explains this Rashi of Shesuya Yayin Ichnesu, and melds it together with the idea of Horu Halacha Bifnei Moshe Rabba. Says the Maral, Rabbi Eliezer Eimer Shesuya Yayin Ichnesu, Pirush. Mibnei Shehoyu Shesuya Yayin Hayu Ha'esha Biyadam Zara. It's because they were intoxicated that the fire that in their hand was considered strange. Livishiloi Hayu Avedasa Mavoida. Because their Avoda wouldn't be good. In other words, what he's doing, he's refining, he's saying it could be that this ketores was appropriate per se, but it's never appropriate if the person who's doing it is not roi la'avoda, is not suited to do the avoda. Because they were intoxicated, so then it became not a meaningful avoda. It's an interesting rule which works by kayanim, is that when a kayan isn't the way a kayan is supposed to be, it's as if he's, in the language of the Torah, a zar. It's as if he's a stranger. As if he's not a kohen. If he doesn't have those special familiar rites. If he's not wearing his bigdei kahuna, he's like a zar. If he's drunk, and he's not supposed to be doing the avoda, he doesn't belong here. He's no different than a Yisrael going to do it. So when it says that the fire was an ezara, shir lo tzivo, some interprets the maral according to Shad, it was a perfectly fine ketores if the people bringing it would have been perfectly fine. But because they were intoxicated, it wasn't fine. He continues. He follows out the thought. Inami, alternatively. So that's the first shot of the maral. According to this, the fire was, the ketores was fine, but for the fact that they were intoxicated, which made the ketores not fine. That's the way he says. Inami, alternatively. Shagam Rabbi Eliezer, Moda Sheikhnisu Ezara. Rabbi Eliezer, the second opinion that Rashi speaks about the first opinion, Horalach Bifnei Moshe Rabban, Shesuyayay Nichnisu Rabbi Shmuel, they agree that it was a strange fire. Elishasayver Shemishum Ezara Lahayu Mason Pisay Miyad. He just says, so they did this avoda. But to get a lightning bolt response, to get death instantly on the spot for doing that thing wrong, I mean, many times people did things wrong. Here the response was so quick, so sudden. Why is that? Death in the hands of heaven for bad things that somebody might do doesn't usually come lickety-split. That's why he holds, Rabbi Shmuel, that they came in intoxicated. And that could cause immediate death. Why? So he says, because it's just, the Mikdash can't take it. It's such a opposite. The Mikdash, which is a place of holiness, and here you have shikrus, right? Intoxication, not in a positive sense. Never the twain shall meet. It couldn't be that way. You know, there's a whole realm of things that we find, situations where we find that a punishment isn't like a punishment. You know, they sat down, they decided this way, you did this, what should happen. It's almost just like a visceral response. It has to happen right away. The Mikdash couldn't take this idea of having someone come into its holiest precincts intoxicated like that. That's what it had to be. Just for bringing the wrong korban, it wouldn't have happened so quickly. Continues Maral, and this is really the punchline that for our purposes, for what I want to talk about. The one who says that it's because they ruled in front of their Rebbe agrees that the issue is fundamentally the Ezara, the strange fire. He was equally bothered, but why the lightning strike? Why does it happen right away? Says, explains the moral, Shememaher Lavai Kefimi Dasai Shukaifetsu Memar Lahashi Bifnei Rabbi. Because it's suitable that his punishment should come extremely quickly. Because what's a Mora Halacha Bifnei Rabbi? What's the nature of that failure? A person who jumps to rule in front of his teacher. That's a person who's not patiently waiting to ripen, to respect the order of things. You know, right now, that person is the teacher, you're the student, you should sit to that person, watch them, listen to them, hear how they rule, go to them. You're skipping steps. You're jumping ahead of the line. You're rushing things. So what's the Mida Keneged Mida? The Neged Mida Keneged Mida, the measure for measure for that is that lo aleinu puranuso mimaheres lavo, that the consequences come quickly. And so continues the maral, ulufikach amar Rabbi Eliezer loisei talmud shayor lach bifnei rabbi shelo yetzi shnosei kidi isa be'erevin. The Gemara tells a very difficult story where there was a talmud, a student who did this. He went out of bounds. He was you know, hanging out his own shingle, ruling things in front of his Rebbe without license, you know, without permission to do so, doing it too quickly. And Rabbi Eliezer said about that Talmud that he was confident that he wouldn't live out the year. Why? I mean, you know, all kinds of things. Again, not the kinds of things we would say, but the Amoraim and the Gemara. And he says, Kimimar lav elefuranus. He wasn't just confident that something would happen, but he knew that this was the kind of thing where something will happen quickly, because the whole nature of the wrong is that the person is jumping to do things too quickly before waiting for the proper order to occur. Then he says, but you know there was the Zara, because how did they get punished in this case? By an Eish. They got punished by an Eish because they offered an Eish that wasn't supposed to come. Okay, that's what the Maral says. I want to just again focus on what we called the punchline of this Maral. The idea of Mora Halacha Bifnei Rabo is a notion of a certain appreciation of order and the patience to accept that order. There's a teacher, a student, a Rebbe, a Talmud, there's a parent, a child, and that order says that, you know, one generation comes before the other, one link in Mesorah and teaching comes before the next. Everyone, with Hashem's help, will have their time, will have their chance, but it follows according to a certain sequence, according to order. The person jumps the gun, Mora Halacha Bifnei Rabo, jumps ahead of his teacher in order to be able to rule, in order to be able to teach, and that the symptom of that is this sort of like a kvita of a jumping ahead, of skipping ahead, avoiding the proper and normal ordering of the world. And for that, the consequences came out in this story, in this dramatic story, right in ground zero of the Mikdash, to be this way. Of course, we can talk about how all of the chatzoim that we pin on Adav and Aviyu, they all have the same sort of sense. Let's say you say Shesuya Yaya Nichnasu. They entered intoxicated. What's the failure of intoxication? I mean, it's the person loses any sense of restraint and order. When a person's sober, hopefully, right, they know their manners, they know their boundaries, they know their limits. An intoxicated person just doesn't realize their limits, loses their inhibitions, their sense of seder, of order, of how things are supposed to go. Same kind of a thing. You're coming before the Ribbono Shel Olam. There should be that sense of inhibition of order. If none of Aviyu were there at Har Sinai and they looked beyond where they were supposed to, right? They went, Vayiras Elokei Yisrael. It was so careful. Part of the system of Har Sinai was, these can go here, these can go there. You're approaching the Ribbono Shel Olam. Understand where's your spot, what your limitations are. So you can generally say it in terms of everything which they did. And of course, if we look at the Egel and Asher Lo Tzivo, the whole notion of the sin, the terrible sin of the Egel, versus the building of the Mishkan, which comes in its place, is that in the case of the Egel, the Jewish people were just doing their own thing. Moshe Rabbeinu isn't here. We need something to connect us to God, to represent. We're just going to make something. You know how many Rishonim explain, the Kuzari famously wrote, they weren't doing something, they weren't like suddenly forgetting about God or anything like that. They were doing what people do, which is, we need something as a focal point to which we relate to Hashem. Don't we do that to a certain degree when we go into shul and everybody looks at the Aron Kodesh and they daven? Right? Don't we do that kind of a thing? What was their fault? What was wrong with what they did? What was wrong with what they did was, they did it on their own. They created their own structure for doing so. The Mikdash, the Mishkan, which comes with the Egel, where we have instruction and description of the fulfillment of instruction to an extreme measure, where we have, remember, you know, Parshas Teruma, repeated in Parshas Vayakel, Parshas Tetzaveh, repeated in Parshas Pekudei, over and over. This is what you should do, And this is exactly what they did. Kasher tzivo Hashem 18 times, 19 times in Parshas Pekudei. Because that's the idea. That's what separates following instruction. And Nadav and Avihu are a sign of this failure to follow instruction. Of this Mora Halacha B'Fnei Rabban is the shortest way to say it. It's the easiest way to say it. Asher Lo Tziva Osam is another way to say it. Shesuyayin Nichnesu, intoxicated, is another way to say it. They're just not following the order. They're not following the order of Mora Halacha B'Fnei Rabban. That's their issue. And it's a significant thing. It's a significant thing that we find in many places. Chazal even speak about the idea that one of the signs of the ikvus of the Mashiach, of the period before the Mashiach, not one of the positive distinguishing signs, one of the negative distinguishing signs, right? The famous expression is the Torah expression of chutzpah yaske, right? Which is chutzpah, right? Everybody knows what chutzpah translates as, right? It's in dictionary as chutzpah, right? So chutzpah prevails, chutzpah grows, right? That's the famous thing. But the Mishnah goes on and speaks about the idea that children rise up against their parents. Right? The young people go ahead of older people. The Seder, the order of things, is lost. And that's a piece that we're seeing here, a piece that we're seeing here, and a very important piece in the Derech HaOlam, in the proper way of the world, in the Derech HaNayim Shaba'olam, is to understand and to appreciate this hierarchy. One of the greatest examples of it, of course, if we're going to think seasonally, is the whole exercise, really, of Pesach. The whole exercise of Pesach, which is to create the environment, not just to remember Yitzias Mitzrayim, but to be Mekayim the Vehigadeta Levincha, the giving over to our children, giving over to those around us, giving over to the next generation. If life in general, one of our biggest things is to be able to give over a Masorah, to give over the tradition, to give over our past to our future, on the night of the Seder, that's the job, right? That's the central activity of being able to do it one to the other. And, you know, a premise of the way we approach things is, you know, as the Ramban said, when we do it, Hashem showed the Jewish people in Mitzrayim His presence, but then we instruct one generation to the next, because a person is not going to be manchil sheker lebanav. Person, right? The responsibility that a parent has to give over, to guide their children, to give them their assumptions, to start things, a parent is not going to give over to their child something which is false. Something which they know to be false. Parents always give over. People give over all kinds of false things to their children when they believe them, right? But they don't deliberately, heaven forbid, do that kind of a thing. And because Yetzias Mitzrayim is a genuine edus, it's a genuine testimony, it's not a hearsay story. So that's the bedrock of the Messiah, and the picture of it, of the child around the table learning from elders, and being able to see that continuity, it's part of Seder. It's part of the perfect Seder, the perfect order of Vahudatam, Levanecha, Levnei Vanecha, of continuing, of passing things through, you know, down the line, which is, in a sense, the opposite of this kind of a picture of Meira Halacha B'Fnei Rabbo. It's the opposite of this kind of a picture of Meira Halacha B'Fnei Rabbo. Straightforward. But remarkably, it doesn't end there. Because you have, in fact, an opposite picture, which gets constructed in this very same story. An amazingly contrasting picture in this very same story. We can start with the next source on your sheet, which is the Rashi in Pasuk Gimel. This is not as much a direct hit, but it's a harbinger of things to come. So Moshe spoke to Aaron, And he said, that's what Hashem said, Bikrovaya Kodesh, and those close to me, through those close to me, I will be sanctified. Ekaved. Says Rashi, Heichan Dibur, where did he say it? When Hashem was describing the building of the Mikdash, he said, I will meet there with the Bnei Yisrael, and they will be sanctified, or it will be sanctified bichvaydi, through my presence. So the Gemara says, you shouldn't read it, al tikri bichvaydi ela b'mechubadai. Don't read it through my presence, but mechubadai, but those who are my most honored. Through them, I will be sanctified. And the idea is that, as explained, you know, elsewhere, there's no question, that the death of Nadav and Avihu, tragedy as it was, made the Jewish people extremely careful and respectful of the Mikdash. Mm-hmm. They realized that they would be literally playing with fire. So they were cautious, they were careful, and that strengthened, in a sense, the sense of sacredness of the place. And it was done through the Hashem's Mechubadim. Amalei Moshe la'Aaron. Moshe said to Aaron, this was his Nichum Avelim. He says, Aaron Achi, Aaron my brother, Yodeya Ha'isi Shiyiskadish Habayis B'myudov Shalmokayim. I knew from when Hashem said it that the house, the Beis HaMikdash, would be especially sanctified through those most dearly and closely known to Hashem. But you know what I thought? Va'isi Savur Aybi Aybach. I thought it would be me or you. After all, who's higher on the totem pole of Miudav Shalmokom, of those known and beloved to Hashem, than Moshe and Aaron? Achshav Re'ani Shehem G'daylim Mimeni Yom Mimcha. But now Hashem took Nadav and Avihu. That's what Hashem refers to as Krivai. I see that Nadav and Avihu are greater than me and you. Mm-hmm. Beautiful, dramatic. Causes us to, you know, maybe instead of what we might do, which is think of Nadav and Avihu as, you know, drunken Kayanim, Rachmanu Litzlan, we see that Moshe and Aaron, Moshe is classifying them as being great. And maybe for Aaron, who's struck by this horrible grief, you know, at this moment, to hear that is something of a comfort. But Moshe Rabbeinu is saying to him something real. Now listen to it in this context. Nadav and Avihu just died. Why were they struck down? Says Rashi, first explanation Rashi gives is, because they didn't defer to Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? They ruled, they jumped the gun. They didn't follow the order of things. And what does Moshe Rabbeinu turn around and say? He says, they're greater than I. They're greater than we, than both of us, than us. In Cain. So if that's the case, what's so bad? We get a hint here that the fact that there's a Messiah and a hierarchy, that you go to Moshe and from Moshe it comes here, doesn't necessarily translate as that means that the child, the next generation, is just there passively to receive from those greater than them. In this very same phrase, about these very same people, the very same event, we speak about Nadav and Avihu being beyond Moshe and Aaron. Okay, so maybe they jumped a little bit too far ahead, but they were supposed to be ahead. Okay, maybe that's a little general. Let's take a look now further, and you see something strikingly specific. Go back to the passage from Sefer Vayikra Perek Yud at the top of the page. We stopped after Pasuk Gimel. The next Pasuk that we have cited there is Moshe speaks to Aaron, to Elozer, and the Somer, Banav and Isorim. And he says they should take the mincha hanoseres mishe Hashem, take the mincha that's left over from that which was put on the fire, and eat it matzah tzeisal hamizbeach. Eat it as matzah, not as chametz by the mizbeach, because it's kodesh kodashim, because it's the holy of holies. It's the holiest of holy. You have to eat it in the mikdash. In other words, he's telling them to eat it. He's telling them where to eat it. But the truth is, by itself, there's nothing exceptional about that. Every meal offering, the leftovers are considered to be Kodesh Kodashim, the holiest of the holy in terms of the food of the Kayanim, and has to be eaten in the Mikdash. What's exceptional is that Aaron and his sons were Onanim. They were freshly grieving. And normally an Onan is not supposed to eat of the items of the Mikdash. Even Maaser Sheni, which is on the lower level of the holy things, the second tithe, which was taken to Yerushalayim, when the Jew would declare at the end of the tithing season, saying he did everything right, what did he say? He said, Lo achalti be'oni mimenu. I never ate it when I was in onen, when I was grieving. So you can't, one can't normally eat this kind of thing when they're grieving. But this situation was unique. This was a day when even people who normally wouldn't serve as onen, in regular kohanim, did serve, because this was the day of the dedication of the Mishkan. This was the day that Hashem brought His presence amongst the Jewish people. So usual rules did not apply. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying to them. And that's when the Parsha continues. However, Moshe Rabbeinu comes upon a surprise. Moshe Rabbeinu went looking for this Ir HaChatos. This was Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Amongst the offerings, there was the standard Rosh Chodesh offering. The standard Rosh Chodesh Musaf that we list when we daven Musaf on Rosh Chodesh. And it has, at the end of it, a sin offering, which is brought for the Jewish people as a whole, for Tumas Miglash V'Kadosha, whatever it's for. And, you know, whereas most of the Karbonos which are brought, the Tamid, the daily offering, the most of the Musafim, the bulk of the Musafim, they're all Olos, which means they all go up in smoke. Nobody has to eat them, so there was nothing to talk about. But the Chatos, even the public Chatos, only a little bit of it went on the Mizbeach, certain designated parts and fats, but the bulk of the meat was to be eaten by the Kohanim in the Beis HaMikdash. And Moshe Rabbeinu looked for it, for the Kohanim to eat it, and he discovered that somebody had burnt it. Not on the Mizbeach, but whatever, had burnt it on the incinerating pile, away from the Mizbeach. And Moshe Rabbeinu was upset. Why did they do this? He got upset at Elazar and Isamar, the leftover sons of Aaron, saying, "Madua lo achaltem es achatos b'mkom haKodesh, ki Kodesh Kodeshim hu, ve'osan asal lachem l'seizes avol adol l'chaper aleim l'fnei Hashem." Why didn't you eat it? Why didn't you eat it in the holy place like you were supposed to? Hashem gave it to you to carry the sins of the community. This is what's supposed to happen. Achatos is offered. Its meat is eaten by the Kohanim. That's all part of the atonement process. Why didn't you eat it? Why did you burn it? Hein lehuvos domer haKodesh penima. Yeah, I understand. Certain sin offerings, you burn the meat because the blood was sprinkled inside the building. But this isn't one of them. Why didn't you eat it in the Kodesh like I instructed? I told you about the mincha to eat it. Why didn't you eat this chatos? Who was Moshe Rabbeinu addressing? He was addressing the sons of Aaron. Vayidaber Aaron. And Aaron spoke to Moshe, and he said, "Hein ayom hikrivu eschatosam esolosam lifnei Hashem." He says, "Look, they offered their korbanos today before Hashem, but tikreno siko eila, and this happened, this terrible tragedy happened. V'yochalti chatos hayom, and I should eat the chatos today. Hayita beinei Hashem. You think Hashem is going to be happy with that?" Hayishma Moshe vayita beinav, and Moshe Rabbeinu heard it, and he said, "You know, that makes sense." So Moshe Rabbeinu accepted the response of Aaron HaKohen. Now this is a very curious story. If you jump down a few paragraphs to Rashi, Al-Vayikru Pasuk Yotes, it says Aaron spoke in Dibur Lulashon Az. Aaron spoke strongly. The whole nature of this thing is strong. Moshe Rabbeinu was angry. He's saying, you didn't do what I said for you to do. And Aaron is responding, it's by nature Az. It's by nature strong. He's not saying, Moshe, you're right. He's arguing with Moshe. And continues Rashi. Efshar Moshe kotzaf al Elazar v'al Isamar v'Aaron medaber. He says, well, what's going on here? Who was Moshe upset at? He was upset at the sons of Aaron. So why is Aaron speaking? You know that this whole thing is a matter of kavod, of respect. Says it's not right that our father should be sitting there and we should be speaking up in front of him. And it's also not appropriate that we as students should be answering back to Moshe Rabbeinu. Just as a note, when it says originally that Moshe Rabbeinu got upset at Elazar and Nisom. I did not copy this Rashi on the page. I should have. He says, "Bishvil kvoida shel Aaron hafach panav kineged habanim v'kvas." Why did Moshe get upset at Elazar and Nisom? Obviously, Aaron was party to this too, but Aaron was Moshe's older brother, so he didn't yell at Aaron, but he did yell at Elazar and Nisom. So Moshe is showing derech eretz to Aaron, and therefore he redirects it to Elazar and Nisom. Elazar and Nisom want to show derech eretz both to Aaron and to Moshe. They want to show derech eretz to Aaron, so they're not going to speak in front of their father. They want to show derech eretz to Moshe. They're not going to respond to Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, get into a fight with Moshe Rabbeinu. So Aaron speaks. Aaron, the older brother of Moshe Rabbeinu, stands and asserts himself and speaks and explains. Right, so far all of this is like nice derech eretz, right? It's good. Good derech eretz. Everybody's being respectful of everybody else. But there's an underlying thing here which would seem to be a real lack of derech eretz. What's that? And Rashi just goes on here with a little aside. Don't think Elazar never had what to say. We find elsewhere that Elazar, when he needed to, said what had to be said. But he says, "Hein ayom yikrivu, mahu omer, elo omer lemaisha. Shema zirakdim dama oinanim sho'inin shavat chilel. Did you do the avodah as onanim?" Because an onan is not supposed to do the avodah. And as we said before, if somebody does the avodah when they're not supposed to, it may be that it's not good. It could be like a non-Kohen did it. Amar le Aaron v'chihem yikrivu shema diotis ani krafti shani kohen gadol makrivainan. I did it. And a kohen gadol can do it even if he's an oinan. But v'tikrenu esikra eila. Afilu hoya meisim bonay ala sharkrev shani chayv li yasoyin aleim keilu. Kohen kol amur in parshas hakohenim. It says, even if it wasn't my sons, which is devastation upon devastation, but even if it was any of my relatives, if I would eat the chatas, would that be good? So, excuse me, so can just go down to the second last line, or what looks like the last full line, Hayitav b'nei Hashem. Says Rashi, Im shamata b'kot she'shoh ein l'chol l'hokol b'kot she'dairis. This is the crux of the argument which they made. The crux of the argument was that yes, Moshe, you told us to eat the mincha. The mincha was part of a special offering that was a once-in-a-lifetime offering. It was a mincha which was being brought because this was the day of the dedication of the Mikdash. For that, there is no tomorrow. There's no tomorrow. If it's not eaten today, it'll never be eaten. If it's not eaten today, the celebration of the dedication of the Mikdash will be incomplete. So you told us, despite everything, eat the mincha. We accepted, we ate the mincha. But what are we talking about now? We're talking about the chatas of Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh comes once a month, whether you need it or not. There's a chatas of Rosh Chodesh every single month. There's Rosh Chodesh Nisan, there's going to be Rosh Chodesh Iyar, there's going to be Rosh Chodesh Tammuz. If we don't eat this today, so you're right, this carbon will be incomplete. But that's not terrible. We're incomplete, so we can't eat it. So it makes sense for that to be the case. This is not the day. This is not the special thing. Just because you told us to eat the once-in-a-lifetime things, despite our terrible situation, that doesn't mean we should eat the stuff which is regular, despite our terrible situation. Good argument. And Moshe liked it. It says, "Vayishma Moshe vayitav beinav." Moshe heard it, and it was good in his eyes. He admitted, and he wasn't embarrassed to say, you know, I never heard this, whatever it is. Moshe Rabbeinu accepted it. But you realize what just happened here? You realize what just happened here? Aaron had a great argument. But who made the argument?
The kids.
Aaron. Elazar and Isamar. Did Aaron and Elazar and Isamar, before they burned the chatos, did they go to Moshe Rabbeinu and say, "Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, we're thinking maybe we should do this, that, or the other thing. What do you say?" Moshe Rabbeinu says, "You know, good point. Or maybe, you know, I really heard that about that from the Rabbi Mishlov." Nothing. They did it on their own. They were Mora Halacha Bifnei Rabba. Ironic, isn't it? It's not only here. Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen. Go down to the next story. Pinchas was the son of Elazar, the son of Aaron. But believe it or not, just because of that, he wasn't a Kayan. His father was a Kayan. His grandfather was a Kayan. But he would not have been a Kayan. Why? Well, simply because on this day that we're learning about in this week's Parsha, when Aaron and Nadav and Avihu and Elazar and Samuel were made Kohanim, Pinchas was already born. Right? If a Kayan has a child, then that child will be a Kayan. But when Elazar had Pinchas, he wasn't yet a Kayan. So therefore, Pinchas didn't get Kayan as an inheritance. But Pinchas became a Kayan. When did he become a Kayan? Through the story for which Parshas Pinchas is named, which actually occurs at the end of the previous week, at the end of Parshas Balak. What happened at the end of Parshas Balak? Bilam, who had unsuccessfully tried to curse the Jewish people, decided instead of trying to get them by hocus pocus, he'll do better. He'll undermine the integrity of the Jewish people. And that will certainly make them vulnerable. And so he gave this idea to the Benos Moab, the Benos Midian, that they should go and seduce the Jewish men, and while they're at it, get them involved in Avodah Zarah, to boot. And he was quite successful to our great pain. And in the context of that story, the pasuk says, as we all know the story, Vine ishmi bnei Yisrael ba, vayakrev el achavis hamidyonis leinei Moshe, ulenei kol adas bnei Yisrael, heima bochen pesacho el moed. A man from the Jewish people, a significant man, came, and he brought before his brothers the Midianis, a Midianite woman. He went, carrying her on his arm, very brazenly. I'm going with this woman in front of Moshe. And they were crying. He was, what's the expression? In their faces, trying to show what he was going to be ready to do with this Midianite woman. Pinchas saw, he rose up, he was just there in the midst of the community like everybody else, but he got up, moved from within the community, he took a spear in his hand, and he did what he did. And the Magefa stopped. The plague, which had been infecting the Jewish people, and people were dropping like flies, he stopped the whole thing cold. And then, that's the end of Parshas Balak, the beginning of Parshas Pinchas. Hashem says, Pinchas, he turned my anger away from the Jewish people because of his kinasi, and therefore he gets kahuna for him and for his descendants. That's when Pinchas became a Kayan. Says Rashi, listen to Rashi, Leinei Moshe, Amar Lei Moshe, they said to him, Moshe, Zu Asura Imuteres, we have a Shaila. Are you allowed to marry a Midianite woman? Is this woman permitted or forbidden? Im Taimar Asura. And they were smart. They said, Moshe, if you say she's forbidden, Bas Yisro Mihi Tiralach. Moshe, aren't you married to a Midianite woman? Mm. Right, so they were challenging, confronting Moshe Rabbeinu. Fehema Baichim, and they were crying. Says Rashi, Nif'almu Menu Halacha. Moshe Rabbeinu, the halacha here was hidden from him. There was a halacha, there was a halachic response, but Moshe Rabbeinu didn't remember it. That kol ha'bayal aramis kanoim poigim bay, that a zealot can attack someone who's bayal aramis, who has such a relationship in public. Go kulam b'fchia. They were all overwhelmed, crying. Ve'egel amad Moshe k'neged shishim ribo. Moshe Rabbeinu had stood up at the egel to 600,000 Jews. Ve'kan rafu yadav, and here he was weak. Here he couldn't do it. This was Pinchas's moment. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't respond, Hashem made it, they didn't remember to respond, to leave room for Pinchas. What did Pinchas do? Ramasav and Iskar Halacha, Rashi continues. He saw the story, he remembered. Amar le Moshe, he said to Moshe, Mekublani mimcha, I learned from you that Habayel Aram is Kanoim Pagamai. When you have a situation like that, attack him zealously. Amar le, he said, Karyona digrusa iuli have parvanka. The one who read the letter, the instruction, should be the one to carry it out. You know it, you do it. So Moshe Rabbeinu didn't do it. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know what to do. And Pinchas knew what to do. And he did it. By the way, what the Zohar says? It's a famous Zohar. I don't know a lot of Zohar, but this is a famous Zohar. It's quoted by a lot. The Zohar says that the neshamas of Nadav and Avihu came into Pinchas at this moment. And Pinchas picked up the Romach and went and attacked them. it draws this parallel. Because what was Pinchas doing? He wasn't doing what Moshe Rabbeinu told him to do then and there. He was doing it on his own. Moshe Rabbeinu was helpless. But of course, what are you going to tell me? What's your response? Right? I mean, that's the question. That's the question. So what's the difference? You know, look how Rashi describes. Pinchas said, Moshe, didn't you teach us this? So Pinchas was initiating. But just like that story of Elazar and Isamar, which was their initiative, even more troubling than with Pinchas, because they didn't check with Moshe Rabbeinu first, but at the same time, loaded with respect. They wouldn't speak in front of their father. They wouldn't speak in front of Moshe. Moshe wouldn't speak about in front of Aaron. You know, to confront Aaron. It's somehow, yes, celebrating the initiative, Allah Nadav Aviu. It was the spirit of Nadav and Aviu that they utilized, that Pinchas utilized, to come and step up here, and to gain the kahuna. But somehow, it was still tempered with something of the seder that's necessary. I mean, it's so uncanny. You know, want to hear another story? There's a story of Shmuel Hanavi. Shmuel Hanavi, right? He was 3 years old, right? His mother brought him to the Mikdash, whatever it was. It was time for him. He grew up. He was ready to serve in the Mikdash. And he nearly got killed on his first day at the Mikdash. When his family brought him this child that they had waited for, that they had celebrated. Why? So the Gemara says, because you guessed it. He was Meir Halacha Bifnei Rabbi. Because he decided Halacha on his own. In front of Eli HaKayan. That Shechita Ksheira Bizar. Yeah, that Shechita, you don't need a Kayan to do the Shechita. A Zar is able to do the Shechita. When Chana said, El Hanar Hazeh Hispalalti, I daven for this child, the Gemara reads the subtext of that story was that Eli HaKayan said, he's Chayav Misa, he deserves to die. Nerve. And Chana, and he said, and she said, well, 1 second. Don't you remember me? He said, I'll get you another child. She said, I daven for this child. Okay, so Shmuel survived. But he didn't survive. You know, Moshe v'Aaron b'chayanavu Shmuel b'kayrei Shemai. So it seems like it takes some nerve. It takes a little bit of pushing the envelope. Even at the same time as we celebrate this thing called Seder, and we celebrate this thing called Mesira, and we're very cautious, appropriately so, about this thing called Chutzpah, but at the same time, it seems that with none of it, you just don't get the job. You don't get the job done. It's complicated. I'm not going to present you with a perfect formula here. Mm-hmm. I'm here to try to open up the idea. And to Mirat Hashem, I want to bring you here one final Torah point. No, it's one final point in the sources. And then we'll try to tidy it up a little bit and be lemaisa, be practical. The last word of Nevuah to the Jewish people ever is the last words of the Nevuah of Malachi. Malachi is the last of the Treyasar, the last of the 12 minor prophets. I don't know why they call them that, but the 12 ones that got short books, right? Malachi was the last Navi. He was there at the time of the Binyan Bayis Sheni. Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi are safe Neviim. The last prophecy after that, you know, there was no prophecy really during the rest of the Bayis Sheni and subsequently. The last words of the last Navi we read on Shabbos HaGadol, Saftar of Shabbos HaGadol. And the last words of the last Nevuah, of the last Navi, are famous words. Again, thank God for Jewish music, so people, we get familiar with these words. Hinei anochi shaleach lachem es Eliyahu hanavi, lifnei vayem Hashem hagol v'hanayra, Veishiv leiv avayis abonim v'leiv panim al avayisam pen avayi v'kesi yasar etzcher. The last five words are very hard words. They didn't make it into the song. And in fact, they're so hard that when we read the Haftarah, we go back and we read the second last pasuk again so we don't end with such harsh words, which say, lest I come and have to destroy the world. Right? That those would be the otherwise. But instead, it's the beautiful words of Eliyahu HaNavi, who will come before Bo Yom Hashem HaGadol V'Nora. Eliyahu HaNavi is the herald of the Moshiach. He's the one who goes ahead and tells us what's coming, the good, wonderful things which are coming. And what does he do? V'heishiv leiv avos al banim v'leiv banim al avosam. He will turn, I'll translate it, generally, he will turn the hearts of the fathers to the sons and the hearts of the sons to the fathers. That's what Eliyahu HaNavi does. And that's what he does as the forerunner of Geula. What does it mean? V'heishiv leiv avos al banim v'leiv banim al avosam. Says Rashi, says the Radak. We'll start with the Radak before Rashi. Radak is more pshutei shel mikra, admittedly in this case. He says, "V'heishiv leiv avos al banim k'mo im banim, l'chayv banim al avosim k'mo im avosim, k'lomer ha'avos v'abanim yachdav." He says, when it says avos al banim, banim al avos, it's saying parents and children together. They'll all be brought back together. Everybody, one big happy family, come together and return their hearts towards the Rabbeinu Shlomo. Rashi says differently. V'heishiv leiv avos l'Kadosh Baruch Hu al banim. Says Rashi, al yidei banim, through the children. Yoimar libanim derech ava v'ratzayin, l'chu v'dibru al aviseichem, l'chayz b'darchei hamachay. Eliyahu HaNavi will coax the children, and he will say to them, go to your parents, tell them to attach themselves to the ways of Hashem. V'chein v'leiv banim al aviseichem. And he's also going to tell the parents, go speak to your children that they should attach themselves to the ways of Hashem. Kach shomati mishmei shu Rav Menachem. Rashi quotes this from one of his mentors, Rav Menachem. What's he describing? Sometimes people see this as, in our time of tshuva, sometimes turn children bring parents back, sometimes parents bring children back. Halavai, it should all come together. It should be leiv avos al banim, leiv banim al avosam. But it's an incredible thing, because what it's describing here is, on the one hand, mesora, and on the other hand, reverse mesora. It describes parents teaching children, yes, second, but it describes first children teaching parents to attach them to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There seems to have been some interruption, as we know, in the Shalshalas HaMesorah, in the chain of tradition. And here, who's bringing whom? Right? You could have the children bringing back the parents. That's the Nevuah of Eliyahu HaNavi. It's an interesting thing, Eliyahu HaNavi shows up twice in our lives. We're waiting for this one that's described in the Pasuk. But he shows up twice in our lives. We set a chair for him at every bris. What happens at a bris? Is a parent brings a little child, lechayz b'darchei Hashem, right? They bring him into the covenant of Avraham Avinu. They attach him to the Jewish people, to mitzvah, when the child can't even do it themselves. And Eliyahu HaNavi doesn't get a seat at every Seder, but he gets a cup at every Seder. Right? Another Messiah. Eliyahu HaNavi is there. V'heishiv leiv avos al banim. And what's a Seder? A Seder is the time to give over the Messiah. If it's almost like we say at the Seder and we say at a bris, through your blood there's the Mila and the Pesach, right? And those are the two events to give over one generation to the next. So we could just leave it at that and say, okay, there he goes, yes, the parents giving over to the children. But that's not what the Pasuk says according to Rashi. And who's Eliyahu HaNavi? Eliyahu HaNavi is Pinchas. And Pinchas became a Kayim on his own. He didn't get it as a Messiah. And Pinchas got it, not only that he didn't get it from his father, but he got it through overruling his Rebbe, in a certain sense, or stepping ahead of his Rebbe. You call it Azus the Kedusha, is that what you said?
Chutzpah
the Kedusha. Azus the Kedusha is the phrase which is used. And you know, in a certain sense, when you sit at a Seder, there is what we call the consolation prize. You know what the consolation prize is? Consolation prize is V'she'ena yodea lishol at pesachloi. If the child isn't asking, so then tell him anyway. Because there's one pasuk which says V'igara t'levincha without a question being asked. But it's not l'chatchila. And in fact, even when you have the she'ena yodea lishol, you're still going to say questions. The whole format is supposed to be questions, which means that somehow the Messiah is okay. We celebrate the Messiah, parents to children, testimony. There's no way a child will be able to testify to their father about their past, about their history. But when the child asks the good questions, then what happens? It's v'heishuv leivavei salbonim al yidei bonim, and it doesn't happen by itself. You know, we sometimes will have a very respectful view of Masaira, to a point where we just see, as Chazal say, how the generations go down and down, you know, getting further and further away from. But I got news for you. We're getting further and further away from, but we're also getting closer and closer to. Now, how you figure out that, I don't know exactly. I have so many thoughts about these questions, and none of them really makes perfect clear sense to me. And we speak about the original ones. If they were like angels, we're like people. If they were like people, we're like donkeys. Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to bring the Gula to a bunch of donkeys?
No.
Right? So evidently, we are making some progress. I mean, it's not just that Hashem's going to say, when I finally give up, I'll bring the Gula. If that's the case, if you know that you're going to give up, then just give up now, while they're still somewhat, you know, dignified. There's such a thing as moving forward. There's such a thing, evidently. How it works with this respect for the past, it's an interesting thing. And the respect for the past is the bedrock of everything. And in the negative part of the Darik Vesod, the Mashiach is that as they're making their progress, they may not look back with respect. The child may not honor the parent. It's so critical that there be a miskeret of the child honoring the parent. And there's also so critical that somehow it's understood that someone has to be Meira Halacha, that someone has to ask the question, that someone has to, in the framework of respect, take the step forward, move the generation forward. It's like Chazal speak about the tzorech, the need. There's a chiyuv for a Talmud to honor his Rebbe. And there's a tzorech, says the Rambam. There's a need, not an obligation, but a need for a Rebbe to honor his Talmud, to honor his student. So that, I promised you I wasn't going to give you like a clear thing, but you understand here that we need, as a door, to be able to stand as those who have a tradition to give over, those who can provide a foundation, a basis, one generation building upon the next. It's very important that that position remain. We're not peers with our children. We're not best friends with our children. And we're our children's greatest support. We should be, you know, in that sense, quote unquote, best friend, but not, you know, this is not, we're not peers, one generation to the other. But at the same time, to respect, to encourage, to realize how our children will move us forward. Eliyahu HaNavi, Beheshiv Leiv Avos Al Banim Leiv Banim Al Avos. And it's something to navigate in this magnificent Yom Tov of Mesorah, and this magnificent Yom Tov of Mesorah, which is focused on how the child's going to take us to the next step, how they're going to lead the Mesorah by asking the right questions. Which doesn't mean they're going to ask a question and we're going to be able to pull something out that we knew already. You know those questions. The best questions is when we talmida yoyser merabaisai, where the student leads us forward. When they ask questions that we didn't think of and they bring out new things. This is the balance. And it's a big thing to navigate and to create, not just for Pesach, but all the time in our lives. Something I hope to, that we can think about and make real. Okay, thank you, Hashem.